This episode of the Hard Drive DL is brought to you by our friends at Napa Auto Parts. Conquer the job with Napa know-how.
You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
Hey everybody, Paulie here with Hard Drive Radio, joined in the studio right now by Johnny, Mark, Daniel, and Ben, the guys in Nothing More. Gentlemen, thank you for coming to see us today.
Yeah.
Thanks, Paulie.
Thanks for having us.
We last saw you, I think it was out of Columbus at Rock on the Range. I know, Johnny, you got to speak with Lou for a little bit.
Yeah.
How was everyone's Rock on the Range experience?
Amazing. Basically, we had redemption. Well, last time we played Rock on the Range, we had a catastrophic technical failure on stage, and we got through it, but this time was our payback. So we got to play the main stage, which was a huge bucket list item for us, and playing with Metallica, which was also a huge bucket list item. So now we can all die.
Yeah, it was so stormy, though. So there's a lot of, I think we're all kind of nervous about if it was even going to happen. You know, because the first day was pretty much mostly evacuated and the festival was partially canceled. And then our day, you know, we all wake up in the bus and it's wet as can be outside. So that's never fun. And it was the last day of the tour, you know, you kind of want it to happen. But it turned out awesome.
What was it? Sunday that you guys played?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right, yeah. So were you there for Friday? Because I think Friday was the worst day.
No.
We definitely were evacuated for like 6 hours.
Yeah.
It was tornadoes and stuff?
Yeah, there were tornado warnings in the area. I had never seen anything like before. I'm like, I'm from New York. I don't know what the hell to do in a tornado. I'm going to die here.
Yeah. What's me neither. We had one hit San Antonio real bad. It was bad enough that my whole room was shaking on the third floor of an apartment complex. And I woke up my roommate. I was like, dude, you need to wake up. Like, we might need to go downstairs. And he was like, so what do we, like, do? I was like, I don't know. Let's just, like, go down into the hallway and hide under the stairs? Like, I don't know. We're on the third floor of an apartment. I don't know what you do.
Stand in a doorway, I think. Or is that an earthquake?
That's an earthquake, yeah.
Oh.
See, we would have been dead.
I feel like a car would be safe because it's heavy. I don't know. You know, I'd just drive towards it because it's bound to move.
Right. That's a good idea.
This is Daniel, the bass player, speaking, by the way. But yeah, that's my advice for everyone. Just drive right at the tornado.
Run to the danger.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys also, I think, played Download over in the UK, right?
No, we didn't, actually. This is Mark, by the
way. Not this year.
We have before.
Oh, I got that wrong.
We were going to. We played in the past. This year, basically just everything came to a giant crunch right before the record's about to release. So a lot of plans had to change. And actually, you know, I think our plans changed, but we heard about some terrorist threat to one of the German festivals that we were supposed to play, Rock 'em Ring, Rock 'em Park. That would have been on the same run. And that's kind of annoying, you know, when that stuff happens. But fortunately, we weren't there. And last time we went to Europe, terrorist thing happened. It actually, remember the Eagles death metal, that incident? We played that that exact venue maybe three months before. Yeah. And it was very strange watching that on television and seeing people running out of this door that I remember running out of barefoot right after the show. And I'm like, whoa, but they're running from something very, that was creepy.
Well, it's so sad because we know the layout and where those dressing rooms are. There's stairways to nowhere. There's no exits up there. It's all concrete.
So fish in a barrel is very scary.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's really messed up. And I feel, you know, it's such a conflicting thing because on the one hand, you don't want them, you know, to achieve their purpose. You don't want them to frighten you into not going to shows. But at the same time, you want to be safe. You're like, you know, do I go to the show where there's going to be a lot of people? Maybe something will happen. It's a tough call to make. But me, for the most part, I'm just like, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I'm still going to the show.
Exactly. Yeah, I always bring my nunchucks. I feel safe.
Yeah, they don't take those at the door.
He's got good nunchuck skills.
I can knock them bullets down.
There you go. Speaking of travel horror stories, I think, Mark, you guys were going down to Knotfest in Mexico, and your passport was stolen?
Totally, yeah. It was a complete Jason Bourne miracle how it was found. So it's typically like a two-man system. What they do is one guy either pickpockets you or picks it up off the floor. I got up out of my seat, and I either think I was pickpocketed or it fell on the floor, and then once you get off the plane, you're not allowed to go back on the plane. So I was trying to communicate to, you know, everyone speaks Spanish. And I know, you know, poquito, you know, very little. And they wouldn't let me on there, and then our manager Will got this idea, like, hey, they've checked everywhere except make sure they check the trash cans. So he communicated that message, and they did, and they found it in the trash can. So the two-man system, like I was speaking of before, the cleaning guy gets it later, and then they would sell it. So,
and he got this idea from a movie, a Jason Bourne movie?
Totally.
And so movies can save concerts.
Yeah, evidently. Yeah. I think one of the funniest things was he paid the crew 20 British pounds to go back in and check the trash cans. And we're in Mexico City.
Bribes work there.
That makes sense. You know, I don't know. It seems more official of a currency, I suppose.
Yeah, you know, you make things go, you grease a few palms, it makes things move faster.
Yeah, it does.
It was scary. You know, I was in a Mexican holding cell, you know, just kind of like in limbo land, like without identity. You know, I'm just chilling here. I hope the other guys are okay.
So you were like removed from everybody else and they kind of like put
totally.
You in. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I imagine that was very frightening.
A little scary.
Guys, got a little bit of new meat in the band with Ben. Hi, Ben.
Oh, hey.
I don't know if we've actually officially met before.
First time.
Yeah?
Yes.
All right.
And it is a charm, as like they say.
Thank you.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about when you hooked up with these guys.
Oh, man. It was kind of... sort of all happened pretty fast. Kind of looking back on it.
Into the mic, man.
Oh, sorry.
There you go.
So I was driving along basically one day and got a text from my buddy basically asking me if I was interested and, you know, if I was open to him throwing my name, you know, in contention for this gig. But he wouldn't tell me what the band was. He's like, yeah, but, I mean, they're awesome and I'm pretty sure you like them. I was like, okay, sure. And got an email from the manager, Will, a couple of days later, and got on the phone with him and found out what it was and everything. And like about a month prior to that, actually it was like 2 months prior to that, I actually picked up the self-titled record in a store and I listened to it pretty thoroughly and was just like, yeah, like kind of analyzing it and picking it apart because I got some audio engineering background and everything. So I was just like, I don't know, just digging into it. I was like, this is really cool. And so when I found out what it was, I was like, oh yeah, I definitely want that. And I happened to be just in Phoenix at the time. My girlfriend was on tour. I had a house to myself. I could actually like get some drums in there and practice. I'm like, oh, I'm going to just go for it. Learned a couple songs, sent it to them a few days later, and I guess they liked it enough that they wanted me to learn the rest of the songs. So I had about 2 weeks there to kind of learn everything by myself. And like I think we had a phone call for, I don't know, about 5 minutes, and they could barely, like, we had phone interruptions. So like I still didn't really know anybody. But yeah, I kind of like went on YouTube, looked at all the live stuff, and just, I don't know, did as much research as I could into playing all the stuff, and then showed up to Texas. We had about 5 days of rehearsal, which all went pretty smoothly, I'd say. And yeah, just went right into touring.
Nice.
Yeah, there. And he crushed it. We got about maybe 100 or so video submissions, and without it being very public information, we just kind of reached out underground interwebs type of thing, and Ben was totally
dark
the
web.
Guy.
It was all dark web.
Yeah.
Until we met Ben.
Dark web. My bad.
I knew a guy.
Yes.
www.darkwebsdrummer.com.
The fourth W. Yeah.
I think you need to secure that site right now.
Dark web.
Will, are you on that? Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
Will's waving. Yes.
All right, so the new album, The Stories We Tell Ourselves, it's all written, it's all finished recording at this point?
Oh, yeah. It's wrapped up.
So where was it recorded?
All over the place. We recorded quite a bit of it on the road. Mark and Ben would go into the green rooms or back of the bus. And I would work on some editing in the back of the bus as well. And then at home, Mark and Ben would typically work in the band house studio. And then I have a little studio at my apartment. And then Dan would be out in the garage working on the show stuff. So we kind of had like a little factory going on. And our manager, Will, he's actually a part of our records process. He co-produces it with me, and we'd be sending stuff back and forth. He was in Austin. So it was a giant, you know, arrangement of moving pieces always circulating. We did have one main studio that we tracked everything at one time, though, at the beginning of the record, where we were all in separate rooms and playing at the same time. So we really did get a lot of music at that time, and then built it in pieces after that.
When you're writing songs for the album, is it just a lot of like, you know, spontaneous on the road stuff, or do you guys like to write, you know, in your home base, in your home area?
It's a little of both, actually. There's so many cataloged riff ideas and everything over the years of touring that you stock up and are just terribly awful quality that we sift through and sort of jam out early. And then while we're working on one song, typically like Johnny will stop us and like, that's cool, let's do that. And then all of a sudden it morphs and it's a completely different song that we had no idea how it would even come to be. So it's just different every time.
I like the illustration of the capabilities of bands these days, you know, because we have the internet and we all have like these little portable recorders you can bring with you everywhere, where it's really possible for you to DIY every aspect of your album at this point. And you guys, I think, do that really, really well because you all have, you know, not only the talent, but the knowledge and the skills to do it. So I would ask, you know, would you encourage, you know, other budding musicians to pick up these production skills? Do you think it's a good way to go? Or
I think it is, because I mean, in any way that you can have more of a hand in your art while still having those objective people in your life around you, the better. I do think it can be a problem though if artists remove those layers of objectivity. Like I said, like for us, that's Will. Will is always that wall or that layer of scrutiny and criticism that it needs to keep going through and bouncing off of. And I think if artists get their hands on into production, that's good, but they can sometimes discard producers or people that need to be a part of the process. I mean, you know, we mix our own record. You know, Will and I did the brunt of that, but we still have somebody else master it. You know, you need another set of ears if you've been in the cave just, you know, inundated with this information for so long, you kind of don't know which way's up anymore. And so I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, and another I think huge neat thing that the DIY approach buys you is time, because you know you're not paying X amount of dollars a day or per hour for a producer. You literally, and I think this is has been a huge growth point for us, is that we have as much time as we want to experiment and get the outcome that we have in our head. And that's so vital, I think, for pushing the boundaries and making things sound cool and different. And I don't know, it's cool.
Yeah, as a player too, like knowing kind of on the console end of things, you know, how you want it to come through, it definitely translates into, you know, when you're on the musician side of things playing, you kind of know how to approach it in a way that'll best translate on recording, which I don't know, it just makes you like a more aware player, I feel like, in general.
Actually, yeah, I want to focus with Mark and Daniel, actually. How much time do you guys spend, like, just experimenting with tones in your rigs and, like, you know, fiddling with the knobs and figuring out, like, what's this new one that I want to play with this time?
Too much time. But actually, Johnny's kind of like the tone Nazi, if you will. Sorry to use that word.
I am the tone Nazi. Yeah, I like it. Actually, I want a name tag with that on it.
It's a good filter of our process to go through, because I feel like most of the time Dan and I will take something 80 or 90% of the way and Johnny fixes it. Sometimes it's like, I didn't even play that. How did you get it to sound like that? And it's completely morphed into something brand new. But it's cool. It's like everyone's ears hears something in a different way. And sometimes that other set of ears is like, wow, that's totally what the part needs to be. And I had no idea.
Yeah, like Mark will play something that's like really awesome, but it'll there'll be like four lines in it. And it's like, oh, that first line, like do that four times. And then everything else you did might turn into this little moment versus like the bulk of it. Sometimes it's just how, you know, what you focus on and what you think's cool. And that's the thing, is like, you know, we're talking about production and DIY. That's the one thing I think every artist and musician needs to really meditate on and absorb, is that you can't replace your mind and your human ear with, you know, marketed products like, oh, this is going to make your mix sound better. Well, it might make it sound a little better, or this might get you going a little faster, but that's all it's going to do. At the end of the day, your human ear and you as a person, as an individual of accumulated experiences and how you view the world is what's going to make you unique amongst other people, not something you buy. You know, those things are just tools to get from A to B. But I think a lot of musicians, myself included, when I got real into production, you get real obsessed with the tools, you know.
Were there specific lessons from the last album cycle that you learned that you applied to this process for making this one, this album?
Yeah, boundaries. For me, I went crazy the last record because I put basically built a studio in my room because it was efficient, and I knew I'd be in there a lot. So there was my bed and my speakers. You know, unfortunately, at the end of this record, it turned into that again. I told myself I'd never do that again. But yeah, my bed is right next to my speakers now.
You'll never escape me, Johnny.
I know. Exactly. But I told myself and I talked to the guys about, you know, our schedule this time around. And I was like, you know, I need to stop at 6 and force myself to stop. And I need to go to the gym or go do something active with my body and get out of my mind, because that was the biggest thing that helped me stay really healthy and sane through this process. Was the last time I was losing all this weight, and like I was like skinny and pale and like looked like a crazy person all the time with Albert Einstein kind of looking hair. And that was the biggest change. Other than that, Ben, you know, joined the band, and Ben had a long history of studio work and engineering. So he actually took a lot of the brunt and a lot of the grunt work off my shoulders when it came to editing and drums. He really knocked out a lot of things that took a lot of time. And so I got to focus more, not just because of his drumming, but his you know, studio experience. I got to focus more on the programming and production and vocals. So it was a more efficient process this time around.
A little easier division of labor, kind of, you know, many hands make light work.
Yes,
yeah. Definitely. Yeah, we all really played to our strengths a lot more on this record, which is cool.
Was there a certain theme or concept that you wanted to work with for this album?
You know, the album title, The Stories We Tell Ourselves, is very much the theme of every song. They all kind of fit into it. They're each really a story unto themselves, like most of our music is. I think most of our songs are inspired by a very specific event or, you know, a phase in life or something that occurred to us. So that's kind of the theme. And as far as musically, though, I think we did take an approach sonically that was much more bass heavy. A lot of rock mixes, you know, are you either don't hear the bass or it's really hyped high end and loud mid range. And we even got some comments online about that. And, you know, our response is that was intentional. You know, the mix is very bass heavy. So we wanted to bring the bass back to rock and roll and feature it more as an instrument, because we're, you know, only a guitar and a bass. We don't have two guitar players. So Mark's doing a lot of stuff that's higher up, and we're leaving a lot of the meat to Dan, whereas a lot of rock bands, I think, just fill it in with tons of guitars, and the bass is just this subsonic supportive element. With us, we wanted to do a little different.
It was just really cool, too, on that same token. Like, I remember playing a couple demos for people, like my girlfriend and whatnot, and she's like, oh, wow, that guitar part's really cool. I'm like, that's not guitar, that's bass. Like, yeah, so especially, like, with the tones and everything we were talking about before, the bass was very heavily explored on this album, which I think is really unique and pretty awesome.
Yeah, I've always wanted to play guitar. I just couldn't hack it, so I'm just kidding. Bass, you know, bass is a really cool and diverse instrument. It's more melodic than I think a lot of rock bands allow it to be. So for me personally, it's cool to be with a group that kind of honors that and pushes that boundary, you know, because I don't know, it does make things cool. And when bands, there are a lot of, I think some of my favorite bands, not just because I'm a bass player, but bands with awesome bass players are usually just awesome and different sounding bands, you know, whether it's Led Zeppelin or Muse, or when you have that guy pushing the boundaries too, it just makes for a totally different experience, I think. So go bass.
Maybe one day you can be, you know, the next Les Claypool.
I mean, that dude's nuts. I don't think I could ever. That's wild stuff. But
yeah, he's insane.
Yeah, that's another. Yeah, yeah. It's like on another planet.
Yeah, I'm more crazy of a John Paul Jones guy or a Jack Bruce from Cream, something like that. But
You know, I'm glad you guys brought it up because, you know, I've been listening to the two songs you have out now, and one of the things that keeps coming back to me is, like, especially the single Go to War, is that bass line. It just keeps going over and over. It's got such a, you know, a really catchy groove that just, like, lodges in my brain. I don't know what it is, but it works. It works really well. Let's actually talk about that song for a second, because that is the single. Tell me a little bit about what went into creating the song. You know, was it, you know, in the middle of the writing process, the beginning, the end?
Somewhere in the middle. And this was one of those songs on the record, maybe the only one, that just came to us in a matter of, you know, 30 minutes. We pretty much finished the song. You know, we had to still record it and do all these things, but a lot of our songs take months and a lot of mix and matching of different parts and ideas. This one just came out immediately. It was one of those magical moments. But I remember being in LA and we were just about to leave from our Airbnb to go to a studio where we were meeting a guy named David Pramick. We listened to this guy's stuff. He was a producer, loved what he did. And like the last record, this one, we would bring in some people that were different just to, like, mix it up. You know, we've been working for months on all these ideas. We just wanted to bring in a different ear and a different perspective. So that's what we were going to do here. And I got off the phone with my ex at the time, and we just got into this huge fight, and it was stuff that had been built up over the last 2 years, you know, really volcanically coming to the surface. And it was probably the angriest I'd ever been in my relationship. And, you know, I've never been really someone to, like, yell or get in, like, fights or be violent or anything like that. But at this point, I was just seeing red like I've never seen it before or ever felt before. And I was just, like, huffing and puffing. We were about to leave. I was like, we better get to that studio, like, right now. And right when we got in, Mark starts playing this thing that we played, you know, I think he was messing with it a few days before. And I was like, hey, nice to meet you, David. Mark, can you start playing that again? And we, like, went straight into it. And this guy, David, was like, okay, cool. You know, and starts playing it and just start flowing. And it just came about, like, just like that, because it was right out of a very real moment and emotion. There wasn't any thought. It just happened.
I would say it really captured it, because, you know, lyrically it's very open about exactly, you know, the type of content in that song, and it captured it really well. And it's, like, it's just a real, like, heavy, aggressive, like, pounding freaking song. So I think you guys did a really good job, and going to the studio right away, brilliant. No, don't let that
sometimes you gotta go, the timing, you know. Thanks
Paul,
gotta capture that magic. Let's talk about the other one, Don't Stop. This is I feel like, you know, it was like a lot more of an experimental tune for you guys.
Yeah. Oh yeah, this is probably the most genre bending what would you call it, mashup of an idea that we've ever had. So we really didn't want to take this any conventional direction. This song originally was another song that we had called Bloodline in its demo form. And it was just like, when you listen to the music on the chorus of this song, it's heavy, it's rock, you know, and every time we kept reapproaching it over the last 2 or 3 years, every idea we did just sounded like, okay, that just sounds like another Seven Dust song or another, you know, this or that. It just sounded like a heavy band, but it didn't sound like anything new or groundbreaking. So we kept screwing with it forever. And I remember one day, I don't know why this popped in my head, maybe it was, I think Prince had recently died, and for some reason he popped into my head. And so I was kind of joking around while we kept looping it, and I started singing really high, and I never really sang like that before, and we just kind of rolled with it. And so you're going to hear on this whole record a very wide range from all the instruments, but as the vocals especially, a wide range of experimentation and tone. And so this was one that I was like, you know, I just want to explore a different space, and that's why it is what it is, and it is its own thing for sure.
And again, another song with a great bass line, like lots of great guitar work, and it's just like everything has come together so well. If the rest of the album is anything like these first songs that I've heard, it's going to blow everybody away. I can't wait to hear the whole thing.
Thanks.
I can't believe we have to wait
until
freaking September.
Get you a secret link. Shh.
Are there any other songs on this album that we haven't heard yet that maybe you guys are particularly jazzed about? Do you have your own favorites?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. The last track on the album is called Fade In, Fade Out, and it's... I started writing this song when my wife was pregnant, and my son, we had just figured out our son's name is going to be Phoenix, based on a sonogram, actually, that, like, the... it looked like a phoenix, and that's the only name we agreed on. So the idea of a phoenix and the whole fade in, fade out thing, passing of the torch, really struck a chord with me. And is in the middle of the night, you know, she's impregnant, he's in utero, and this melody just came to me. And sometimes that happens, and you're just like, I'm so tired, I don't want to get up and write this down or like get my phone out and record the idea. But I forced myself to do so. And I worked on this idea and the concept over the next 2-3 years. Finally showed it to the guys, and they followed. They helped me with it and helped craft it. And this is it's definitely a destiny checkoff box for me, as being a father and what that is, and trying to, you want to teach your son everything. You know, show him the way, and one day, you know, you're gonna have to go, and it's just gonna be him. He's gonna be left on his own, to carry on. So it's, what's neat sonically, this song is almost Led Zeppelin like, and it's the first song that we've ever had that's kind of sort of meat and potatoes traditional, and then goes crazy into the forest or whatever.
Into the forest, goes into the woods.
Yeah, and it just like Zeppelin would or something. So it's really special, and I'm so happy that it made the record.
It really is like the God Went North of this record.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it's that epic kind of emotionally charged.
And a little Easter egg, Ryan, the violin player from Blue October, we got him to play on this song and another song, actually. And his son's name is Fade. So it's kind of a...
Yeah, it was a weird serendipitous synchronicity kind of moment.
Yeah, and he did an amazing job, and the song definitely wouldn't be what it is without those string parts.
Awesome. Ben, do you have a favorite child from this one?
Oh, yes, I do. I don't know, should I say the names?
Yeah, I just did.
I don't know, I really like this. There's one song in particular called Still in Love that even like the day after we just kind of, I don't know, it sort of came together pretty quickly, I'd say, at least in the form that it is now. And like the day after listening to the demo of it, it's like, oh, this is some powerful stuff right here. I don't know, it's just a really cool song front to back.
Good. Daniel?
Yeah, I'm with Ben. I think my favorite one is Still in Love. I don't know why. It kind of has this chord progression that reminds me of the Pixies. And I remember I sent the demo to my older brother who taught me how to play bass. And I was like, yeah, listen to the bridge. I hit a harmonic, and then I use a whammy pedal and pitch it up an octave. Then I use another whammy pedal and pitch it up another octave. And I was like, I wonder if that's where double whammy came from. That always just kind of stuck.
Whammy.
Yeah, whammy. Whammy. Yeah, that or the first track, Do You Really Want It? Is that what we ended up the title with? Yeah. Something about it. We just have cool gang vocals. It has this like awesome, powerful verse that I really dig. So one of those two.
When the album is finished and everything's recorded and you have like, you know, a disc with all of your stuff on it, how do you like to first sit down and listen to the whole thing? Do you have to like go for a drive? Do you like sit in your room alone? How do you like to first hear your music?
I think I had a really cool spiritual strange moment while bumping around in the bus in my bunk or whatever. I'll just being on tour, and it's completely dark like a coffin or whatever. Not that I've ever laid in a coffin before, but I could imagine. And just putting the isolating earbuds in and listening to it from start to finish with no interruptions, and going completely to that imaginary headspace or land, and giving it the time and emotion and effort that it deserves. That's what I like to do. That's my favorite place. Same with any falling in love with a record. We were just talking about the Dredge record El Cielo, and that's like, how you have to treat that record. You have to give it the time and have no interruptions and just listen to it from start to finish. It's a special thing that a lot of people don't do anymore.
Yeah, and this record was made in a way that, I mean, you can listen to any song on its own and it'd be fine, kind of mix and match, but it really is made to listen from start to finish. It has a progression. One song flows into the other. There's themes, and Alan Watts is on this, you know, again, with some really interesting thoughts leading the whole thing.
There are lyric videos out now for Don't Stop and Go to War. Are you guys shooting any music videos for these as well?
Yeah, we shot two for did each of those, and they're one's getting released tomorrow. Well, Monday. I don't know when this is going to.
It's today.
Today.
It already
today?
Got released, Johnny.
Oh,
Aftershock,
it's out.
Aftershocks.
Look out!
Yeah, Facebook.
Look out, man! Look out, man! Right, check it out. Go to Ward videos out, and then Don't Stop will be coming out sometime. I don't know.
What is the most challenging part of shooting videos for you guys?
Actually feeling it, because most of the time your amps aren't turned on and it's like, okay, this is fake and we're only doing like 30 seconds of the song. And so we secretly have, you know, a little stash of Liquid Courage typically around somewhere to help us get into the vibe. But that's always been the most challenging thing for me.
Yeah, to feel like a real show, it's not exactly a real show.
Yeah, a lot of times we haven't even played these songs live before. Like with these last two, you know, they're brand new songs. Yeah, we didn't play them on tour, so it's like we have no mood, you know. There's nothing. It's just all fresh, and you're faking it.
Yeah. It's a real challenge when you're trying to play, but you want to make sure your hair still looks good, and you're just like, oh, man, the challenge.
Yeah, keep the stupid looks off your face.
Do you guys impossible. Like try really hard not to make like guitar faces? You know, talk about like you're playing, and you like, you know, like close your eyes. And,
yeah.
Like, do you try not to do that for videos, or do you just like go nuts and like make it as crazy as possible?
That's inevitable.
You just go nuts.
Yeah.
You can't help it.
Yeah.
Every face of mine is good. What are you talking about, Paul?
Yeah, Mark doesn't have the wah face either. Whenever he goes to his wah pedal,
I do. Like, I do have to really concentrate if I'm playing an expression pedal or something. Just. Even without opening my mouth, it starts moving automatically.
Just try to hold blue steel the whole time, you know? Zoolander pose. Yeah, I try, but it's hard.
You guys pretty much, everyone knows you for your stage show because it's just such an amazing display. And just, you know, besides the fact that you're all amazing musicians, you have this great equipment that you bring with you everywhere. And I want to talk a little bit about the Scorpion Tail, because the first time I saw that, as I'm sure everybody, I was like, what the hell is that? That's amazing. So, like, where did this idea come from, and how do you figure out how to build things like this?
I mean, the original idea for the Scorpion Tail goes back several years. Johnny brought this little MIDI device into the rehearsal room and kind of had the idea to DJ the band, you know, like actually do what a DJ does with manipulating audio, but have it actually be live people, you know, us literally playing notes and kind of chopping and screwing and stutter editing things in that way. So that was the original idea. The problem with the device was that it looked like a video game controller and it sounded cool, but it was all just kind of, I don't know, immediately for me, I was just like, this just like we have to give some sort of visual representation to the audio that people are hearing. You know, like if there's a pitch bend, it needs to be a large lever. If not, just have this entire massive metal structure itself bend. And as they see, you know, something massive with all this real world physical energy bending, they hear the guitar pitch down. That's kind of the idea. To me, that's the power in what it was supposed to be. So I just kind of started cranking on it, and I worked on the actual Scorpion Tail piece. I worked with a good friend of mine, Taylor, and we kind of co-designed it, at least like all the gnarly metal elements. And then years ago, I had the idea to get Drumtron to lift in the way that it did, and I didn't have the time to work on it until this last album.
And it was scary,
cycle.
The first...
yeah, it's frightening.
You had a few versions, you know, before the actual thing that you see on stage. And fortunately, Dan tested it out him and Taylor before I ever tested it out. But even the first time I tested it out, I was very frightened. Like, there was nothing to hold on to.
Yeah, nothing.
It shot up really fast. It didn't have a lot of room to stand, and it was super shaky.
Yeah, it didn't have a floor to stand.
You're going to kill me.
Yeah, the first time I went up on it, you know, put your head about right under 12 feet above the ground. And so I'm on a concrete driveway. I go up. Drumtron is just in, like, skeleton form. I took off the floor, you know, what would be the floor, which is the back plate. And, you know, it was just so scary. I was like, you know, I can't, there's no way I'm going to finish this. Like, it's just not going to work. And then a few months later, you know, here it is. It all kind of came together last minute and is this cool, big thing. I don't know. It's just watching it, even every night on stage when I watch it go up, I'm just like, I can't believe this thing. There's just so much weight and so much energy into lifting a person and a big steel structure. And
how many days without an accident?
Have we had an accident yet?
Yeah, all of our crew at some point has been stung.
Yeah, but it I don't know. It's fun building it all, and I think it really adds to the show. And Johnny does a really great job of taking things like that and turning it into just this wild freak thing, this freak show kind of thing. It's not just, you know, it goes up and tilts over. It's like, oh, it gets bounced on and then violently looks like it's going to flip into the crowd and things like that. So, yeah, that's the tale of the Scorpion.
And what better music to play than a DJ itself? So, it's a Skrillex tune first of the year. So it's really cool. I'm so surprised and stoked that this all came together.
Yeah, because we've always heard electronic artists remix organic music. We haven't heard a lot of organic bands do electronic songs. So Dan and Mark got their guitar and bass to sound exactly like these synthesized electronic sounds that Skrillex has created with knobs and buttons. They're actually creating it by playing it on an organic instrument, which I think is pretty cool.
I would agree. I'm just trying to, like, imagine, Johnny, your face, like, Daniel calls you up and he's like, hey, man, I built this thing. I want to catapult you into the sky.
Yeah. Oh, you can ask Dan. I was pretty skeptical.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm cool with this.
Like, yeah, the first few times, I'm like, have months of work into it.
He's like, you'll be fine, or maybe not.
Yeah, I'm like, you're probably good. Like, give it time, man. Give it time. We'll keep refining it. Don't shoot this down.
We had this epic video of it first lifting, and I put on this really cheesy Final Fantasy VII soundtrack music or whatever, so it was cheesily epic, and it's just like going up so slowly, and my arms are out, and yeah, I'm rising to the sky into oblivion, and it was pretty epic.
Very slowly.
Yes, yeah. Very slowly.
How much does it weigh to...
I would say the actual lifting portion probably, what do you think, Ben? Like 175, 200 pounds in total? Maybe more.
Not bad.
Like just the lift or with
just Drumtron the lift. And then Drumtron, I think, is probably pushing like 170 now, 180.
So,
because it got a lot of new metal in it.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's surprisingly not.
Scorpion
heavy.
Tail probably weighs another 50. So
it's probably maybe 40. Between 300 and 400.
Yeah, between 300 and 400 pounds total.
So, yeah, I was anticipating, you know, around like maybe, you know.
Yeah.
That much, but I gotta imagine it's gotta be expensive to like have to ship all this stuff around. Like, you know, if you have to go overseas, you know, how much are you paying to get this stuff out there? And then, like, do they inspect it and they're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, there must be drugs in this thing.
Who are they gonna stab?
Yeah,
what kind of terrorist device is this?
Unfortunately, it is very expensive to take this stuff overseas. This next trip to Europe, I don't think we'll be doing Scorpion Tail just for that reason, but the following one, we definitely will be. So, I mean, it was funny the first time we have a road case for Drumtron and all of the metal stuff, and it's just the most hilarious, like, oversized, you know, weighs 500 pounds road case. But yeah, we've shipped that, you know, all around the world several times now.
I don't think you guys got to play, you know, a full headline set for Rock on the Range. Are you still bringing the Bassinator around? Is that still part of the set?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
We might evolve on it a little bit.
Hopefully we'll have some new music for it. It just depends on how much time we have and what we get to.
When you guys are on the road, most of you are in really great shape. Makes me feel a little shameful about my body. I know you guys are talking about, you know, hitting the treadmills where you're in the hotels. But like, how do you have a routine when you're on the road to stay fit, and what do you do?
You have to be really flexible on the road because you just have to kind of look ahead and see when your windows are and then take advantage of it, because that is the hard thing about being on the road, is that lack of routine or access to, like, good workout equipment or facilities or whatever. I mean, you know, like today we had enough time before lobby call to hit the fitness center at the hotel we're at, so we did.
I got real into cycling about a year and a half ago, and the last few tours I take apart my bicycle, put it in like a bag, and put it in a bay of the bus. So that's cool, you know, because usually when you're in a city, you're just stuck at the venue, which could be, sometimes it's cool and in a like a neat area downtown. Sometimes you're just in some random strip mall. But I'm able to, you know, leave and go 30 or 40 miles and kind of see the area.
You guys have announced a tour coming up in the fall, I think, right?
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, putting it together and where you're headed.
We're doing a full U.S. tour, and we have some highlight shows along the way. One in particular that I'm really excited about, where we're playing with Nine Inch Nails and A Perfect Circle and some other huge names. Meshuggah's on it.
Aftershock.
Gojira. That's going to start in September. And we're playing with a band called Hell or High Water, which we had before. The singer was the drummer in Atreyu. And who else are we having out? We signed off on My Ticket Home.
Yeah.
And As Lions. We had them out before. They're label mates of ours. And My Ticket Home is a band that I listen to in the gym all the time. So that'll be nice to have that, you know, really aggressive music before we go on and get me pumped.
Yeah, Johnny would be at the back of the venue, with dumbbells.
Side stage.
Yeah, bro.
One of the things I loved, I was scrolling through the Facebook feed for you guys, and your end of the tour prank for As Lions.
Got him.
Tell us what you did, and then tell me if you're worried about reprisal on this tour.
Well, that's good. Probably should be worried.
That was, I think that was masterminded by our front of house guy at the time. He's like, oh, we're just going to get a bunch of Saran wrap and we're just going to just wrap their van. And that turned into, I don't know how many rolls we got, like at least 15, 20.
Yeah.
And going, and we got a bunch of people involved. It was a very team effort by us and some of the Hell or High Water guys. And we covered that thing. And then we put, finishing touches, we got some whipped cream on there, too. Started tucking all the trash, like, in the Saran wrap. And
drew a penis on the hood, like you should.
Yeah, somehow penis has to end up there.
Somewhere. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a prank, you know.
So it was funny. During our set, Austin Dickinson from As Lions, he came up, and in the middle of first punch, he had a wig on and he drew abs on his stomach, you know, to like symbolize
with
Johnny's
his shirt off.
Chest.
And then
he pushed Johnny out of the way and
grabbed the mic out of my hand.
You're a mad cunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, he changed
all the
British,
wrong words.
British
so
reinterpretation
funny.
Of our lyrics.
That was awesome.
That's fantastic. Now that you guys are kind of, you know, veterans at this, looking back at your beginning experiences when you hit the road, you've been a band for a very long time at this point.
Yeah.
So looking back at your beginning experiences on the road, is there anything that you're a little more sensitive to for the newer bands that are rolling with you that you maybe weren't when you were younger?
You mean like, as a headliner bringing openers out? Yeah. I mean, I think we've, When you're a younger band, like, you know, we were at the beginning, there are times when you don't really understand why things are the way they are, or why there's kind of this pecking order. And then as time goes on and you kind of pay your dues more, you do realize, like, okay, this is why the band leaves their drums on stage and they leave all the, you know, before it'd be like, God, they don't leave us much room at all. We can barely, you know, because we had all this stage stuff. But now it makes sense because so much is technically involved that it's pretty hard to tear all that down. And anyway, you just need everything to work by the time you go on. So there's a little bit more understanding now on our end, but we also remember what we thought at the time and try to not go out of our way to be dicks about it and not make them feel totally crunched on stage. So there's little things like that. And also, you know, when we were younger, it meant a lot when the headliner would you know, watch our set at some point. So we'll each try to check out the show and, you know, watch them side stage or out front or something.
Definitely. Or, you know, give them a case of beer or, you know, bottle of some sort. Be accommodating.
Yeah, invite them on the bus and hang out. And yeah. I think the big thing is, like, the local opener, because that's... I mean, I remember years ago when we opened for Papa Roach in San Antonio, before we were signed or anything, they were just, like, such an untouchable, famous band, you know. But to hear that several of them watched our set and kind of talked to us after, like, it was just so special. So try to do that anytime there is a local on the show. So,
Is there anything you'd like to say to your fans out there who will be listening to this interview?
Thank you. Thanks for the support. And, you know, I know you've been very patient with us on this record. It's going to pay off. I mean, we spend all that time really pouring our hearts into it. So we're not just going to put something out there. So we hope you enjoy it. And if you don't, just don't be bitchy about it online. You know, have some courtesy, people. If you don't like it, move along. Fucking assholes. But we love you. We still love you. You can tell us what we don't want to hear. You know. Yeah. Enjoy the record.
Excellent.
And we hope to see you soon.
All right. Record is The Stories We Tell Ourselves. It's out September 15th. Nothing more. Guys, thank you so much for coming to see me today. This was a blast.
Thanks for having us, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Love talking with you.
This is Hard Drive DL. Check out more. Download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app or visit harddriveradio.com.